the World Bank has downwardly revised economic growth for the sub-Saharan Africa region, citing persistent uncertainty in the global economy and the usual reason of slow progress in addressing domestic reforms. In its biannual report, Africa's Pulse, the global lender is pegging regional growth at 2.6% for 2019. That's up 0.1 percentage points on the 2.5% achieved last year, although it's 0.2 percentage points lower than the bank's forecast in April of this year. Well, to unpack the issues for us, I'm joined on the line by Neville Mandemika. He is sub-Saharan African economist and fixed income analyst at RMB. So when we look at the trade war and the global value chains, how have you seen the whole saga impact on regional growth?
Well, I think the transmission is effectively from two channels, right? So firstly, from a financial market perspective, where in real time we see, you know, some of the currencies weaken because there isn't that much appetite for, you know, for sort of investable assets in Africa, given what is happening from a global perspective. And also from a trade perspective, if you look at, you know, the East African countries such as your Kenya, your Ethiopia, et cetera, that typically tend to export in that part of the world, the slowdown there, I think, is material, and we're going to be seeing that over the next couple of quarters as we get the GDP results.
Hmm. It's interesting to see that the main laggards in the sub-Saharan growth story are the big boys, South Africa, Nigeria, and Angola. Do they have something in common?
Other than the slow growth, not really. I think in South Africa, I think that the story is well documented that, you know, in some cases we are sort of shooting ourselves in the foot by not reforming as quickly as we need to. And at the same time, in Nigeria, I think we haven't seen that amount of, or at least significant amount of investment in the oil sector, which tends to be very critical for the economy. And then in Angola, they're trying to sort of reform, but, you know, some of those fiscal reforms do come with sort of short-term pain, which is, you know, stagnating the economy. So, you know, the big boys, as you put it, are not in a very good spot at the moment. But we do see some bright spots on the continent, though.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. The likes of Kenya, Ghana, and even Rwanda, they just keep on galloping away. What is it that they're doing right?
Well, if you look at the point of commonality there is that the economies are relatively well diversified. So they are not just dependent on one or two commodities like your Nigeria, like your Zambia, for example, that tend to depend on one or two commodities. Mm. But they're a lot more diversified. So you tend to see that the economic growth that we see of 5, maybe 6, 7% is coming from a whole range of sectors and not just one. So you tend to see that stability even in an environment where global growth is slowing. They can pull on various levers to actually ensure that the economies are growing relatively well.
Yes. So with global uncertainty comes a lot of market volatility, which impacts currencies. If the dollar is going to continue on a firming trend, is there a danger of a possible debt crisis for some African countries where they're unable to pay back their principal loan amount?
I don't think we are there yet, simply because if you look at the big economies, your Egypt, your Nigeria, South Africa, etc., they've got relatively comfortable levels of foreign exchange reserves. So they can intervene in the market whenever they do see currencies weakening. I mean, we see that quite regularly from the Central Bank of Kenya, from the Central Bank of Nigeria, as well as in Egypt. So whenever we do see that weakening pressure, they can easily step in. But the risk here is that if we do see an elongated recession, or if we do go into that territory, then I think some of those dynamics start to play in. But it's certainly not, at least in our view, a sort of 2020 story. I think if we do see the sort of environment over the next 3 years, then we might have to start having serious conversations.
Yeah, of course, with the South African story, we've had a lot of discussions on this platform and obviously in media generally around, you know, the level of crisis that South Africa has from a debt perspective. And I think the general understanding is that we're not really in a crisis, but if we continue on the trajectory that we're on, we could get into a crisis. Just in terms of the Moody's rating around the corner, they've pretty much given us the impression that they're not likely to be harsh in their judgment come November 1. But when you look at our debt metrics, our pedestrian growth, the risk that Eskom poses, and so on, do you think that they might be kicking the can down the road, or do you get the sense that we're likely to start unleashing initiatives that are going to edge us away from the precipice, if you like?
Yeah, that's certainly the hope. I mean, we do you know, anticipate that, you know, during the current administration of President Ramaphosa, we are going to see some reform. But I think the risk here is around, you know, what is happening from a global perspective. So even if we do enact the right things, right, there's still, you know, a global economy that is slowing down. And given how well integrated South Africa is, you know, we might not see the uptick in economic growth to the degree that we can. But the challenge that we do see is, you know, with things such as Eskom and low growth, et cetera, that is almost here to stay for a while longer. I mean, there's no silver bullet to sort of fix Eskom over the next, you know, 2 months. I mean, all of that is going to take a little bit of time. And unfortunately, you know, we're almost, you know, at the precipice. So we need to get going in order to avoid that detrimental result for Moody's.
Yeah. So coming back to the broader sort of continental issues, one of the threats that the World Bank cites are climatic changes. We saw how that storm, Idai, earlier in the year, how it ravaged Mozambique, parts of Zimbabwe and Malawi. And the proposal is that Africa needs to start investing in climate resilient infrastructure and the like to help mitigate the disasters that are still yet to come. Is this likely to be an expensive exercise? And no doubt for some African countries, that's going to be quite hard because, you know, their fiscal situation is not really robust.
Yeah, I think it's certainly an imperative, particularly for the East African economies that tend to have agriculture as the dominant factor within their GDP composition. So if you look at, you know, the likes of Kenya that tend to export tea and coffee, it's imperative for them, given the erratic weather conditions that we're seeing in that part of the world, as is symptomatic with global climatic changes. It's important that they actually buttress that or start investing in new technologies that are immune to the sort of vagaries that we see in terms of climatic conditions.
Yes.
So it's no longer just an option, but it's an absolute necessity if they are to maintain, you know, the relatively healthy appetite of economic growth and the sort of investor appetite that we tend to see in that economy. So it's a must. It's no longer an option.
Yeah. For as long as I've covered economics, you know, the World Bank, the IMF, they've always come out with this particular reason, you know, for Africa's lack of progress, and that is the addressing of domestic reforms. Just give us sort of a few ideas as to what they're referring to. We've heard the story around South Africa, and we have these conversations all the time around South Africa, but broadly speaking?
I think in most cases, they're talking about fiscal deficits, right? So what we tend to see in Africa is that fiscal deficits relative to GDP tend to be a bit high, which is symptomatic of the fact that, you know, there's a large amount of borrowing and GDP growth is not necessarily as high as it should be. So we tend to see that excessive level of borrowing that tends to come with it. But I think that said, it's important to realize that, you know, Africa has come a long way in terms of macroprudential policy. So if we look at, you know, the likes of Egypt, which is a very recent example of proper policies that are bearing fruit. I mean, almost 3 to 4 years ago, you know, coming out of, you know, the Arab Spring and everything else that came with that, we're seeing proper economic reform coming out of there. This is an economy that's growing at about 5.5%. Inflation is coming down. And there seems to be a sense, at least from the international investor community, that Egypt is sort of the place to be within Africa. So there are some, you know, good stories to actually highlight, although there are some concerning countries as well in terms of lack of fiscal reform, which is obviously keeping investors at bay.
Yeah. While poverty has come down over the years, it's still a reality for many Africans, with the World Bank indicating that 4 in 10 Africans, or some 416 million people, an amazing number, they live on below $1.90 a day. This is horrible. I mean, what are the solutions being recommended to get out of the poverty trap?
Well, I think the solution there is twofold, right? Number one, we have to diversify our own economy so that we're a bit more resilient in terms of growth. So while and I think this is a very interesting perspective, while we're talking about, you know, subpar growth in South Africa, it's important to remember that, you know, that 1% or 0.5% that we're seeing here is coming from a multiplicity of sectors. So it tends to be a bit more resilient, whereas in some economies in Africa, it tends to be a bit more volatile. And that is not good in terms of actually building, you know, the income base of households to actually push them out of poverty, because you never really know what next year is going to bring. So I think it's important to diversify our economies. And at the same time, it's important for the governments to realize, or at least to start managing their books a bit more prudently, in a sense. And I think this is where your initial point around fiscal reform is quite important here. Because if we are sort of using and generating domestic resources to grow our own economies, we don't have to borrow. And if you don't have to borrow, there are no interest costs, which tend to eat into household spending and the wealth of individuals. So I think it's important to put those two sort of things in place and ensure that Africa is on a more sustainable path.
Absolutely. Neville, it was a pleasure talking to you. That was Neville Mandamika. He's a Sub-Saharan Africa economist and fixed income analyst at RMB.